A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents Edward R. Murrow with the news. How much driving did you do over the past 2 weekends? That trip on Labor Day, the ride in the country Sunday afternoon. Why, just trips to the grocery store can add up to a lot of miles. First thing you know, you'll have another 1,000 miles on the speedometer. And when you do, play it safe. Take your car to your Amoco man for a thorough servicing with Amoco-approved lubricants. And do it regularly, every 1,000 miles. It's great insurance against wear. And now, Edward R. Murrow with the news.
This is the news. There is no important change on the Korean battlefront, but there is no quiet. For a second day, Allied and Communist infantry and artillery have been firing at each other north of Taegu. American officers tell reporters they expect an enemy offensive at any hour. The weather was good. Our planes carried out some 300 ground support sorties, some of them in the south around the Masan area. South Korean President Ri is predicting that the Allies are almost ready for an all-out offensive. In a number of Pennsylvania towns yesterday, there were tearful goodbyes as the Pennsylvania National Guard 28th Division left for Camp Atterbury in Indiana. Training, and then the front. Early this morning, one of those trains was stalled by a broken air hose near West Lafayette, Ohio. Red flares were put up behind it. But in a heavy fog, the Pennsylvania's Spirit of St. Louis rushed down on the stalled troop train, smashed its last 2 cars like tin cans, and came to a stop against the 3rd car. The latest estimate on the dead vary from 27 to 32. Some 65 soldiers were injured, 1/3 of them critically. Almost all of the dead and injured came from Wilkes-Barre and Carbondale areas of Pennsylvania, members of the 109th Field Artillery Battalion. In the shocked cities, where there were parades on Friday, goodbyes on Sunday, tonight's casualty list is longer than any the two cities suffered in a single battle in the last war. The railroad and the government are investigating. At the United Nations Security Council, the Russians lost their bid to have the Chinese communists invited to a hearing on the Chinese charge that an American plane strafed a Manchurian village. The vote was 6-3, 2 countries abstaining. It takes 7 votes for the council to take action. The Chinese nationalists and Cuba supported the American position against the invitation to the Peking government. The Russians were supported by Britain, France, India, Yugoslavia, and Norway. Egypt and Ecuador did not vote. Secretary of State Acheson and French Foreign Minister Schumann arrived here in New York today. Tomorrow, with Mr. Bevin of Britain, they begin a Big Three meeting. On Friday, they meet with the other Atlantic Pact foreign ministers. Next week, the opening of the General Assembly of the United Nations. Mr. Acheson came up after a closed session with congressional foreign policy leaders. They approved the general line he will take at the New York meetings. They are confident practical conclusions will be reached. Mr. Acheson says he has several concrete proposals for the North Atlantic Pact ministers. Mr. Schumann told reporters that the president's weekend announcement that we will increase our troops in Europe substantially is a good thing, a very great and important contribution to the common defense of Europe. Mr. Schumann says he understands that the president said our troops depend on the West Europeans taking similar action. He said France is working in that direction. In South Africa today, Jan Christian Smuts died of a heart ailment. He was 80 years old, a great soldier, a great statesman, the man who started the British Commonwealth of Nations idea, the author of the preamble to the United Nations Charter. In England, George Bernard Shaw took a fall in his garden, fractured his left thigh bone, was rushed to a hospital for operation. He is 94 years old. His doctors say, although a fracture of this nature in a man of his age must be regarded as serious, Mr. Shaw's condition at present is satisfactory. The Senate today ended its final day of debate on what kind of communist control bill it wants. One is the McCarran bill that calls for registering of communists and communist front organizations, denying federal jobs and passports to communists, among other things. The other is the Kilgore bill that calls for the internment of all communists in the event of war or a national emergency. Backers of both bills claim the opposition bill is unconstitutional. Supporters of the Kilgore bill say their measure is tough. The McCarran bill is weak and unenforceable. Senator McCarran says the Kilgore bill is milk and water. His bill is expected to be approved in tomorrow's vote. That is Senator McCarran's bill. Commerce Secretary Sawyer and William Henry Harrison, the new head of the National Production Authority, met with 21 steel industry leaders today. They asked for the industry's plan to step up steel production, which is now 7 million tons a year greater than it was at the peak of the last war. The industry people will submit their plans later. The Agriculture Department says this year's crop will be the fourth largest in our history. Added to our reserve stocks, it should mean that no price controls or rationing of food will be necessary in the course of the next year. House Speaker Rayburn said today that supporters of an excess profits tax bill are delaying other tax collections that the government needs desperately. Mr. Rayburn and other administration leaders want to work on an excess profits tax later on. They want approval now of the general tax bill, calling for increases of $4.5 billion. But Democratic Representative Eberharter of Pennsylvania says the corporations are making big profits now. To do the fair thing, Congress should draw up an excess profits bill in 3 weeks. Republican Senator Kaine of Washington State, just back from Europe, says Generalissimo Franco of Spain told him, America better act soon if we want to work out a mutually beneficent agreement with Spain. The Weather Bureau has warned residents of the New England coast that gales which might reach 65 miles an hour will sweep the coast early tomorrow. The president has warned us, in rather blunt language, of what we may expect. Harder work and longer hours. More production for military purposes. Higher taxes for both corporations and individuals. Plus an excess profits tax designed to recapture excess profits that may have been made since the beginning of the war in Korea. There will be priority control of strategic materials. But for the time being, there will be no ceilings on either wages or prices. There will be increased control of installment buying, and our standard of living will go down. All of this is an effort to steer a middle course between no controls and complete mobilization. It is part of the price, probably only the first installment, that we must pay not only for defense, but for our position of world leadership. It is part of the history of modern states that war and the preparations for war mean the freezing and postponement of both personal and national plans, plans for improvement and progress. But there are two aspects of our national life which I think cannot safely be postponed, frozen, or neglected. The figures show that in both areas our national record, even in peacetime, has not been too good. Not as good as most of us probably believe. The first is education. During the last war, 8% of those called for military service were rejected because they could not meet the minimum educational requirements. In other words, we turned down far more than enough men to man our whole military establishment in Japan and Korea. And we turned them down because they couldn't meet the minimum literacy requirements needed to make a soldier. We are spending an average of only about $153 per year per pupil. We have 5 states in this generous and prosperous land where the law allows a minimum teacher's salary of less than $1,000 a year. The latest Census Bureau figures show that half of the adults in this country have not had as much as 2 years of high school training. In the last 10 years, 500,000 teachers have left their jobs. The National Education Association estimates that 100,000 teachers now holding jobs are not qualified to teach. There are another 100,000 teaching jobs still unfilled. It is reliably estimated that we are short 300,000 classrooms. Those are just a few of the figures. There appears to be little doubt in the minds of the overwhelming majority of citizens that we must have the guns and the gear for the conflict that impends. But the choice in a free society is not between guns and butter. It isn't as simple as that. Matters of the mind cannot be safely neglected. Valor and victory in the field can be and have been on occasion thrown away by an uninformed electorate. The National Education Association reports that states with the lowest educational standards also have the smallest turnout of voters. Politics and politicians take no holiday during a war and the preparing for it. The elections coming up in November will do much to determine what this country can and can't do, the policies it will pursue during the next 2 years. Here again, our record gives us no cause for self-congratulation. In 1940, we managed to get out 63% of the vote. That was the best we ever did. In the 1948 election, just half of those qualified to vote went to the polls. At the last election in Britain, it was 76%. In France and in Italy, only 10% of those entitled to vote failed to turn up at the polls and cast their ballot. And in South Korea, in a free, open, and orderly election, 90% of the qualified voters turned up. Remember, only half of us went to the polls in 1948. It is both fashionable and important these days to talk and write about war in Korea, Russian foreign policy, German rearmament, and all the other urgent and complex problems that press in upon us. But even in the midst of trying times, times that may become desperate, while we talk of aggression abroad and subversion at home, of harder work and higher taxes and more guns and more planes, it might be well to remember, occasionally, that our system of government, the one we are preparing to defend here and elsewhere, depends upon an informed electorate and its willingness and eagerness to exercise its power at the polls. If we neglect, I am tempted to say if we continue to neglect, the schoolroom and the ballot box, the future will probably take its revenge. This is Ed Murrow. I'll be back in a moment with the word for today. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
An automobile engineer looks at a car a lot closer than most of us do. He knows what makes it tick. He can visualize every working part. And more important, he knows what happens inside the cylinder when the motor fuel is burned. He knows that ordinary gasoline doesn't burn completely, that it leaves carbon and metallic deposits. But one motor fuel is completely different from ordinary gas. That motor fuel is Amoco gas. Anti-knock qualities of Amoco gas are refined into the gasoline, not added to it later. It's not blended with non-petroleum products. Every drop of Amoco gas is exactly like every other drop, and every drop burns completely and evenly. There is no metallic deposit. The engine stays clean, and a clean engine means lower maintenance costs over a period of longer service. But engineers aren't the only people who have come to know all these things about Amoco gas. Every day, more and more motorists are learning that in any car, on any road, on every count, there is nothing like Amoco gas. That's my word for today. And here's Mr. Murrow with his word for today.
It is now clear that our taxes, both individual and corporate, are going to go up. Thomas Jefferson said, "The tax which will be paid for the purpose of education is not more than the thousandth part of what will be paid if we leave the people in ignorance." And Thomas Mann, the great German scholar, put it more simply. He said, "Schoolhouses are the Republican line of fortification." Good night and good luck.
If there wasn't so much dirt in the air, a housewife wouldn't have so much trouble keeping the furniture dusted. And automobile engines would last a lot longer, too. For dust is a deadly enemy of working parts in an engine. It scratches them, damages them. But dirt hasn't got a chance. When you use Amoco's premium Permalube motor oil, this is the oil that cleans as it lubricates, helps protect moving parts against both wear and dust. Remember Permalube motor oil. It cleans as it lubricates. Listen to Murrow tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.